Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Richard Rossi Live. Today we have a wonderful director, Kevin Shawn Michaels, and he'll be back with us shortly. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome to Richard Rossi Live. We have Kevin Shawn Michaels here, and we're going to have this 30 minutes will be very packed with a lot of interesting information. Kevin has been a filmmaker who has an incredible, diverse background. He worked for Troma with Lloyd Kaufman. He's done a lot of stuff on his own, directed a film on Vampira, Ted Michaels. Well, we'll get into it and welcome him because he has just arrived. Welcome, Kevin. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thanks, Rich. Thanks for having me on. It's a great pleasure to talk about these things. You know, it's just, I could go on forever. You know, we only have half an hour, but.
Yeah. He has so many films that you'll enjoy watching. The first film Kevin directed I saw was Vampira. And, tell me how you, what made you decide on Vampira? You had kind of a childlike love for the old horror movies, the old B movies, and did you encounter her when you were younger as a kid with Plan 9, or what was your first experience with Vampira?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I used to watch the Chiller Theater back in New York, all the great movies, and it was just required watching.
Yeah.
And it's funny because my dad does not remember this, but he actually said, hey, the Wolfman's on, Abbott and Costello, you must see the Marx Brothers, you must
see
this. Frankenstein, you have to see this. I mean, and he would go on, and he knew everything about these movies. And now I talk to him, and he says he has no memory of doing this. But this was before audio commentary, and
yeah.
He used to tell me all these things about these actors. And he says, I never knew any of that stuff. But.
Well, I think as kids, what impacts us as kids, it's like it emotionally goes in there and makes this imprint that we remember it. But because they were adults, maybe it was just another thing, and he had to get to work on Monday or whatever. But for us, we remember that. And you ended up doing that. This ends up what you're doing. So Vampira, so interesting how, and your film really touched me with how, she does this Plan 9 because she's kind of desperate for money, really, probably. I don't know what the truth was. I heard Paul Marcos brought over some cash from Ed Wood or something, and she was desperate. I think, was she blacklisted or something, or called,
Yeah, first things first. Yeah, the thing about the $201 bills, the reason it was $200, which you just realize here, is that Ed Wood was actually doing this movie SAG.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a SAG minimum. If he could have paid her $50 or $25 or have it be free, that would have been fine. That's the reason it was $200. But it was much like in the Ray Charles movie.
Uh-huh.
Paying her in dollar bills was a way to show that it was more money.
Yeah, make it look like a thicker wad.
Yeah, in Ray Charles, he has to be, in the Ray Charles movie, he gets paid in ones so he can count it. So he can count the money. But she thought that was a little bit insulting to do it that way. But, yes, she was desperate to take it, and it was good money at that time, and it was just something that she just was very, very pleased to do. But then, the money goes, and then you're back again on the bus, and you have to still eat. And, she was kind of destitute, which she talks about in the movie.
Yeah, your film really got me to think about, I saw it in a whole new way. I was friends with the woman that played Voluptua, who was a TV hostess at the same time, and friends with her. And she had told me that she sometimes had to bring Vampira food in the lean days so she'd survive, bring her over a casserole. But the thing your film really made me think about for the first time was she does this, like, one-day gig or whatever it was on Plan 9 over there at Quality Studios at Santa Monica and Western. And she ends up talking about that one day. Now, all these years later, again and again and again, what she thought was kind of like this inept guy.
Right. She said she didn't realize what was to become of his career, and that he would be revered, and that, now it's like everybody's saying it's classic. But apparently, Conrad Brooks told me you couldn't give the film away.
Yeah.
And it took many years. They filmed it in 1956. It didn't really get released, almost released until 1958-59. But they could not book it. This was not a movie that somebody said, this is great. They sort of missed the boat on even the genre. They were too late for even the genre, even starting in 1956.
Wow.
So,
wow.
This was very meaningful for her to do this, but then she also thought it was, you know, playing it as mute was going to be something that was a great idea. But apparently there was lines. I mean, I have a copy of the original script. There's no lines for Vampira.
Uh-huh.
But she said that she had a conversation with Ed to get rid of the lines, that the lines were ludicrous to her.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well,
who knows, right?
I love the film. What's the best way for people to get Vampire the movie, your film, on her? Would it be Amazon?
Oh, they can easily get it on Amazon, or they can get it on oldies.com, which is
oldies.com.
The distributor. Yeah. There's thousands of great titles on oldies.com as well.
You've done so many interesting things, and I know we're jumping around, but I guess before you went out and made these films on your own, was the trauma period when you worked with Lloyd Kaufman prior to that?
Yeah, well, I'd heard all these stories about Lloyd Kaufman, how crazy he was and
yeah.
all this kind of stuff, and how he was trying to create sort of this Andy Warhol aesthetic
uh-huh.
and have his place open and people could come and they could make art and all that sort of thing. And it wasn't really like, wasn't the same time period. You know,
mm-hmm.
I wished for that. I'm constantly wishing for things that don't exist. You know, I'm wistful for ages, you know, in time that wasn't around. And decades ago, I guess there was creative periods. But then you would talk to people in the 60s and they say, oh, well, you still have to know someone. And so, you know, what you read is not always what it is. So when I joined Troma, it was sort of like, okay, here's more of a film school atmosphere, not like Andy Warhol. Everybody's going to sort of be in and out, and, you know,
yeah.
it was like sort of that free, you know, expression. It wasn't like that at all. But I really did enjoy it. It was like every day was like a boot camp. So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. What do you think enables him to have a business like that, that is viable, you know, versus like sometimes people that listen to the show really get discouraged. They're, you know, look, I'm behind on my rent trying to make my film and I'm struggling to sustain, and they make a passion project and I don't, you know, edit it on their Mac on Final Cut. And somehow going way back to, I saw his first film, I think shot on 16, the one with Lynn Lowry in black and white. Somehow he's been able to sustain it as a business. Is it, you know, he's just a good promoter, marketer? What do you think it is?
Well, it's amazing because he's really jealous of, like, the Oliver Stones of the world, you know
uh-huh.
I mean, on the one hand. But on the other hand, he hates corporate films.
Yeah.
And he would never want to be part of the studio system. He really believes that. And that's something that I always was kind of attracted to Lloyd about, because, you know, his philosophy that independent cinema should thrive and that it's corporate conglomerates are ruining everything, net neutrality. I mean, it could go on and on.
Mm.
But the situation really is for him is that every single year he was struggling. I mean, the door was going to close every single year.
Uh-huh.
And I often tell people that if you approach it that way and you really are serious and you're trying to go for the long haul, you'll become legitimate in the
mm-hmm.
long haul.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you may be the clown today, but very often we read in blog posts that you know, filmmakers are just, you know, a bunch of guys running around. But seriously, people are, like, losing their houses. You know, they go on Kickstarter, they make a little bit of money, but then they spend much more than they ever raised.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, their relationships suffer. Every kind of thing,
yeah.
every kind of blood, sweat, and tears and hard knocks goes on to make
wow.
your film. And what's really, really fascinating to me is that so many people don't give up. You'd really think people would be dropping like flies, but year after year you see the same people still trying to make their film because
yeah.
they believe in it. And that's the love. I mean,
yeah.
you know, and also the other thing I always stress is that, you know, there's still passion in a Guillermo del Toro. Just because he works for a big studio doesn't mean that he's a sellout or Peter Jackson's a sellout.
Right.
You know, they are still passionate people and they want to make art just as much as everything, but they're in a more complicated situation, maybe even a worse situation in a way.
Yeah, yeah, they're not as free as you or myself or people doing it on our own. I had a doc I made that was in the Academy Award short competition, and there's a big producer came, big-name producer, and said, I'm jealous of you. You can just run out with a camera and make what you want to make. And I said, well, I'm jealous of you. You're making a lot of money at it. But it really is that kind of dichotomy sometimes. And is that what drew you to Ted Michaels? You did. I loved your film that you made on. And some people may not know all of Ted Michaels, but he goes back to what, the '60s with the Doll Squad, and he's been just cranking out, you know, so many films like kind of like a Lloyd Kaufman. Is What got you interested in, as the second film? Was that your second major film?
Exactly. Well, first of all, Ted's been doing films for 65 years, so it's hard to believe. Hard to believe.
Wow.
But this is his 65th year making films.
Mm.
Again, the spirit, the fact that you get knocked down, you get right back up. He started, you know, making actual films, educational films, actual feature films,
mm-hmm.
and having no distribution, is in the same boat as Ed Wood was. Actually, a little bit worse, because he was actually coming from Bend, Oregon, which there was no scene. He tried to bring Hollywood to Bend, Oregon. He did convince Disney to come and make Indian Fighter in the 50s, and he even was a stunt double, and it showed people how to shoot bows and arrows and so forth.
Yeah.
So anything you could do, any way to, like, put this thing with that thing and stitch it together. And I tell people all the time, that is the whole key to this thing, is that you're going to find your location, you know, some place that you have somebody you know, and maybe you write a whole movie around that location.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the sky's the limit, as we like to think, you know, in a big feature film, you just write about an airport and you get it, or whatever your background would be.
Mm-hmm.
So use what you have. I mean, that's what Ted's been doing for 65 years. He never had any special financing or any leg up, or he wasn't born into money. He basically just built on opportunity.
Yeah, that's true. I really enjoyed it. It's the title, for those of you listening, is The Wild World of Ted V. Michaels. And is Amazon also a good place to get that?
Sure.
Yeah, and it has some great extras on it. I really enjoyed the interviews with him. And interesting, the whole anecdote about the Doll Squad, his film may have been the inspiration for the whole Charlie's Angels thing.
Oh, more than may have been.
Yeah.
Tura Satana invited Aaron Spelling to the premiere.
Is that right?
And sat there, and Aaron Spelling watched it all.
Wow.
Nowadays, you would sue people.
Yeah.
But Ted gave me some really great advice. He said, you know, a lot of times you do need to sue people, but a lot of times you also can think of more ideas. You know,
it's
flattery.
Yeah.
And he didn't make another movie. He made a TV show, and so that, you know, he was very flattered by that, actually.
Yeah.
But apparently Francine York was offered to be in the Charlie's Angels, and she turned it down. And that's another story in the doc. But it was really, really a tangled web, because you think it's a million-dollar idea, Charlie's Angels, three women, you know, they're going to, you know. But it was part of the genre. It was part of the grindhouse genre in those days to do these kinds of films. So that film was derivative of other films. So, but nobody could do them the way Ted does. And I tell a lot of filmmakers I speak to, do your film. It's not a million-dollar idea. Tell as many people as you can, because you need to get that feedback, and you need that kind of energy coming back from you, you know, coming back into your project.
Yeah, well, I really enjoyed that. Now, their third documentary was animation. How was it? The Love of the Hammer stuff, or how were you led to Ingrid Pitt?
Oh yeah, Ingrid Pitt, Beyond the Forest. Well, here's the thing about Ingrid Pitt. Of course, anybody who knows Hammer Horror knows that the great films that she was in.
Yeah, and just absolutely gorgeous woman.
Her presence but her backstory. It was really after I had met her and read her book that I knew about her backstory. That she had been in the concentration camps and
this was as
survived.
A child. Was it as a little girl, right?
Yes.
Wow.
And it sort of dovetails with the Anne Frank story. Mm. Which she was around the same age. She wanted to be a movie star. And Frank wanted to do the same thing.
Wow.
Here's somebody that survived and actually did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't heard of any other story like that. I mean, there's similar stories, but this one is very much, if you read her book, you can sort of, the woman had nine lives. I mean, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I can't say enough. But also to learn about the period myself as how it could be a legacy project, especially after she passed away. But I was literally writing to her back and forth, working on a full-length documentary about her life, and then all of a sudden she's gone. And then you're just left to try to figure out, what did she want? What's a good way to honor her? What's a good way to highlight the story?
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to do the animated short as sort of a kickoff. And eventually I'm going to do the full length.
Oh, I can't wait to see the full length. And the animated short was a really, I thought it was a great choice, because it taps into that sense of the childlikeness that she, and then wasn't there a child animator also participating?
Yes, Perry Chan out of San Diego. We found him at Comic-Con.
Really?
He was as tall as the table. He came up to the Bill Plimpton booth. And,
wow.
And the weirdest thing about Perry was he's very unobtrusive,
mm-hmm.
especially, you know, as a but even as a child, like so quiet and just sort of came up to the table, and he was copying Bill's art. And I was just amazed how well he was able to copy Bill's art.
Wow.
At 9 years old. Well, Bill was not very impressed, obviously.
Wow.
But just you know, an amazingly perceptive kid, I can say that. And we really had a great time. And, you know, he's become a film critic recently.
Wow.
In the last few years. And he goes on these big press junkets. He, you know, interviews stars and directors. It's amazing.
It's interesting to see what he does, what he continues to do. You know, I think it was like Ed Woodian in the best sense of the word, because like when Bela Lugosi died, he still had to finish Plan 9, and here you are throwing a curveball, and you know Ingrid passes away, and you're like, you know what, you know, we'll get to the documentary, but for now, let's take what I have and let's do this short, and it was very well received.
Yeah, well, there's that great line in the Ed Wood movie. You know, he says, "This is the seed that grew the mighty oak." And he holds up the small film can,
yeah,
you know, to his landlord. It's an interesting.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea. You know, just to know that you can take something. But we were in the midst of a very, very big plan of getting Hammer involved with the project because of the clips that are involved, the stars reaching out to Christopher Lee. I mean, this was like no small one day off thing.
Wow.
And our husband, was amazing in helping me. I mean, giving me contact this person, and they were sort of reforming Hammer at the time a few years ago.
Mm.
And I think they're making a couple of new features. I haven't
really?
Seen them yet.
Wow.
But they're making a couple of new features.
What is it about those films? I know the costumes, the castles, they didn't make it, I don't think, on the scale of like American studios, but yet they have this. You always know it's a Hammer film. It's just a whole new world or something. It's just
yeah. I mean, they describe that in Ed Wood also. He says your films were mythic. That's a great word. They really were. I mean, there's dream spaces in those films. The darkness is very important, and the characters are important, and it puts you in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that they didn't have a lot to work with.
But I tell you, I'm always just soaking in their production design and the look and the dress and the feel. It's just fantastic. And then from there you did a documentary starring David Lynch, Beyond the Noise, focusing on meditation. You know, once again, you're, you know, connected to an artist that's been kind of an outsider, although he's probably been more in the studio than anybody else. But that was an interesting. What's your thoughts on that project, reflecting back on it now? Because that's been, what, is that a couple years ago now?
Yeah. Well, you know, I wanted to tell people about the benefits of transcendental meditation, which David Lynch has been doing for 40 years. And the greatest thing about David is that he's so calm for a guy who makes all these sort of terrifying films. And I say terrifying not in the horror sense, but an extremely emotional genre that he sort of created for himself. I mean, people say Lynchian. He sort of made his own genre.
Yeah.
And people don't even know how to copy it. So that's how original he is. He's a true original. And just to know that he has to come from a place of calmness to create his art, to create this dark art, that you don't need to live in that space and you don't need to be a depressed, sulking artist.
Yeah.
And how long did it take me to figure that out? It took me a long time
until
I started meditating to know that, oh, this depression thing is something you need to get rid of and as soon as possible, because it doesn't help you in your art. It only deters you. It gives you more excuses.
Yeah.
And it's just not something that's a healthy lifestyle for you. And it's always there for you. It's always available. You can always get depressed again. You won't lose it. It's not part of your character.
Yeah.
And once you learn that, boy, my focus really, really, really changed as far as like just attention to detail. Like you mentioned, like doing a film on your computer, even just on Final Cut, go off, you meditate, you come back, and you do more editing, and you're fresh, and you're feeling good. And that's, whereas, you know, you can get easily frustrated, you know, especially with high-definition files. Lately, I've been trying to come up with all kinds of methods to do post-production, trying to you know, do what, almost like what the Beatles did, was like reduction mixes of things.
Mm-hmm.
Try to down-res things, up-res things. You know, in Avid, you can do everything in the low-res, but in Final Cut, it just bites you on every turn.
Yeah.
So I know we had a conversation about that last week.
Yeah.
But no, meditation has really benefited me, and so I was saying, well, let's find somebody who really needs meditation, follow their journey along, see if it helps. The girl that was the subject of the documentary, Dana Farley, she was in high school. They said that she wouldn't graduate because of her severe dyslexia.
Wow.
And, you know, people don't usually say you won't graduate when you're, you know, out of Long Island, you know, in a good school.
Mm-hmm.
But they were just afraid that she was just going to just slip right off the map. And she had an interest in filmmaking. We talked to her teachers. We talked to her, some of the faculty. Nobody wanted to help her.
Mm.
Her parents kind of joined in and said, well, if it helped even 1%, we'll try it.
Uh-huh.
She learned the technique, and that was sort of her journey. And it's just an amazing thing. And now she's in college. I mean, it worked.
Wow.
Great.
And she's focused because I think when she started, she was very ADD and couldn't concentrate. And so this really, she's a whole new girl now.
Yeah. Well, here's the bizarre part, though. The last 15 minutes of the film is her and David just speaking, just, you know, person to person. And they're like two Martians. They're like, they understand. They're on some wavelength that you wouldn't believe. And they're communicating. Like they're finishing each other's sentences. They never met. Couldn't be two different people on the world. And here they are sort of, you know, meeting on a pure level.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. There's a scripture about spirit recognizing spirit. And there's a film now, that a recent one that is a lot of fun. Supernaturals. There's a Z at the end of Supernaturals. Am I saying it right? Supernaturals?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And so tell us about this film. This is kind of creepy, but kind of spoofy at the same time, and which makes me think of maybe your early trauma days with the whole poltergeist, where you're kind of is there an element of satire in this?
Oh, of course. There's people have picked up on. Each scene is sort of an homage to I've gotten a lot of emails about this, an homage to a certain genre or a certain movie.
Wow.
So I think people would really enjoy just to see if they could pick out what I'm actually saying and doing there.
Yeah.
And whether I'm serious. I don't want to go out to make a bad movie, you know. That's always that thing, you know. The thing about Ed Wood is he tried to make the best movie he could and fell short of it, you know.
Yeah.
Some people feel that way.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, well, let's do all the setups and storyboard it, sort of like what Ed would have done, sort of recreate what his situation would be like right now if he was making films. You know, those kinds of budget, those kinds of actors, those kinds of setups. So I really, really followed that, you know, the same kind of lighting, the same, you know, the same amount of cameras, you know.
Yeah.
And we really had a great time, except for we shot in what seemed to be a haunted house. That was the only thing. You know, you couldn't have a better house. This was a 1930s, was supposed to be built as a dairy, but it was a residence of I forget who the famous person that lived there, but it was kind of an interesting place because the actresses claimed that they heard voices and noises and all kinds of things.
So there people really felt there was something demonic possibly.
Oh, yeah. They actually thought there was something going on. They thought there was whispering and so forth.
Wow. Well, that might have helped the whole ethos of making this film, that feeling.
Yeah, that's the things you don't expect, I guess.
Yeah.
It's one of the benefits. But, you know, whether you believe in that or you don't, they certainly did.
Yeah.
They certainly did.
Yeah. Yeah. It's on Amazon. You can get the DVD or stream. It's Supernaturals, Kevin Shawn Michaels. And I know you got other things germinating in your head. Is there anything you can say in terms of future projects yet, or are they still kind of your own private thoughts at this point? Or?
Yeah, some things are bubbling. There's a couple of really good things. One thing I do want to talk about is Adventures in Plimtoons.
Oh, yeah.
Which is out on Hulu, and all the great response and working with Bill Plimpton. And especially working with Bill on Ingrid Pitt Beyond the Forest and then working with him on a feature documentary. It was just really incredible to see somebody who lives the art life and literally puts all his money back into the craft.
Yeah.
It's just a great thing. I really admire Bill for that. And if people don't know who Bill Plimpton is, he's just one of the last great animators hand-drawn, all on paper, tries to avoid the computer as much as he can.
Yeah, thank God for him, because, yeah, CG's great, but we've got to preserve these guys that are really tactile and doing the work the old school way.
Yeah.
And honor him. And it's on Hulu for free, isn't it?
Yeah, you can watch it on Hulu for free.
You can watch it free, Adventures in Plimtoons.
You know, it's funny. Some people don't know that Hulu is actually free. There's the Hulu Plus, but this is on this is on the free side of Hulu. And actually, I hope Hulu continues that.
Yeah, well, it's fantastic that you did this. And we talked about it last show with Lexi about this film as well. So if you guys go to Hulu, Adventures in Plimtoon, a documentary about Oscar-nominated animator Bill Plimpton, it's there now, free. You can watch it free, which for you struggling artists out there, that sounds really good to you, I know. And it was in some film festivals. I think Alexia had mentioned the last show was in Bend, Oregon at a festival. Am I remembering
right? Yeah, it's been all over the country.
In New York, Woodstock.
Alexia did a big premiere in MoMA. It's been at Annecy. It's been all over the world now.
Wow.
I mean, it's really a good example. I mean, she's a good example of you do things on your laptop, and it gets out to all these festivals, and people don't know what really went into doing it.
Yeah.
And it's a great thing. But it really is like hitting rocks together sometimes, making these independent films.
Yeah.
Because it's not even how much money goes in. I mean, it really is. There's always those days where you feel down and you feel you just can't finish it.
And you wonder, will I get there, huh? Well, you know, you have the tenacity of all the great artists and all the guys that you've associated with, the Ted Michaels and the David Lynches and the Lloyd Kaufmans. The one thing they have and you have is your finishers, you know. You execute, you're artistic killers. You execute and finish. And there's a lot of people in this town, unfortunately, that have the dream, but they don't finish, you know. It's like Columbus on the boat and there's a mutiny and everyone's dying of some illness and the boat springs a leak. There has to be that captain that's like, we're getting to the other shore. We are going to finish this journey no matter what. And you know, you've done it time and time again, you know. And I hope people listening are inspired, that are discouraged, that, you know, it is a miracle, though, anytime you finish a film, isn't it? I mean, I feel like if anybody that finishes a film should be so respected because they have done something that is like fighting a 15-round prize fight and, you know, and lasted the distance.
Right, right. Yeah. And people say, you know, films are never finished. They're just given up upon.
Yeah.
At some point, you just got to stop painting on the canvas, you know?
Yeah, because you probably watch some stuff you've done and think, oh, I probably would have shot that a little different if I had to redo that, huh?
Well, that's all art, you know.
Yeah.
I just saw this interview with Joni Mitchell. She talks about she can't listen to her own records.
Yeah.
She's like, I should have done this, and I should have done, you know, these are classic records. We've heard that time and time again.
Yeah, I've heard Scorsese watching one of his Taxi Driver, and he got upset, and somebody said, what's wrong? He goes, I'm still editing that film in my head. I can't, you know, should have cut there, you know, instead of there, on that frame, not that frame, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing. For me, it's a journey. It's you give a year or 2 years or 3 years of your life devoted toward it. You hope that people will like it and will sort of catch the energy of what you were trying to say with it.
Yeah.
And for me, it's always been about the creative space.
Yeah. Well, where can people, where would you recommend they get in touch with you, Kevin? What's the best for you?
They can always just see me online and they can write to me through my website.
Okay. And what is your website?
Yeah, vampirethemovie.com. They can always reach me there.
Vampirethemovie.com, one of my favorite films. I've watched it at least 4 or 5 times. And I absolutely love that film, VampireTheMovie.com. I was so excited when that came out. In fact, when I heard it was coming out, I got wind you were doing it before it was done. I was one of those people kind of counting the days to see it. So, well, I've been so blessed to have you on the show. I'm so encouraged, and I hope everyone else listening is. They're giving us a sign-off signal here of a few seconds. So thanks for tuning in, everybody. I'll let you know what's coming up here real quick, a few shows. This Friday at 9 a.m., if you're a Bionic Woman fan, we have a woman, the Bionic Blonde, who has an incredible website and trivia and all kind of things about the show. That'll be fun. next Monday, the 24th, at 11:30, Al Doshna, who produced a film called Haunted World of Ed Wood Jr., documentary, will be here. And next Friday, the 28th, Kevin Miller, director of the film Hellbound, will be here. And then Friday, March 7th, I'll talk real quick here. A few seconds left. Friday, March 2nd, if you guys remember the classic show Family Affair, Kathy Garver, who played Sissy, will be here. She has a book coming out called Surviving Sissy. And that was a great show, but a lot of tragedy around the show. Little Buffy, Anisha Jones OD'd, and Johnny Whitaker battling addiction. She's going to talk about kind of staying grounded and how she kind of was the one person on that show that kind of survived all that, as well as the new things she's doing. Anyways, I got to run. I'm running over time again, but thank you again for listening. It's been a blessing to have Kevin Shawn Michaels. Check out VampireTheMovie.com and all his other work. Until next Monday, or until Friday at 9 a.m., our show on The Bionic Woman. Stay safe.